It's Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station FM 107.1. Of course, joining us, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, the law firm. By the way, just to give you a reminder, you can call them at any time, and I would strongly recommend that after this conversation this afternoon. And, of course, anytime if you have any questions, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And as I always remind you, please type out the word AND, A-N-D, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Afternoon.
Wes and I are going to talk about the responsibilities of the clerk of court in the state of North Carolina. Let us, and some of our listeners don't even really know what a clerk of court is. The words make one think that they simply are a secretary or a filing person, if you will, someone who is responsible for the paperwork in our courthouse. And they are responsible for the paperwork in the courthouse and the proper filing. But there are so many additional responsibilities of what is known as the clerk of court. Last I think I learned in fifth grade, we have 100 counties in the state of North Carolina. I think that might still
That's
be
still,
right.
Still the case, it, yes.
Is it? Yeah. Okay, good. All right, well, we you know. Yeah. And each and every county has a courthouse, as one would expect, a register of deeds and a superior court. And so there is then an election. Our clerks of court are elected, a public official, if you will. Our current clerk of court in Carteret County is Ken Raper. He is superb, an excellent clerk of court. We have had a lineage of great clerks of court. Lockwood, I think you know that here in Carteret County, way back to Darlene Leonard and forward from there. But our current clerk of court is Ken Raper. And so this person is elected. They do not have to be a lawyer, by the way. That's going to be interesting when we get here in a little bit more detail. But they are elected by the citizens of the county. And now what is going to happen in our conversation, Lockwood, is going to become very interesting, because our clerk of court has an enormous amount of legal discretion. They do, in fact, sit, if you will, as a judge of facts and circumstances and the law in many different substantive areas of the law. And right out of the gate, you know, in the estate division, in the petitioning of real property partitioning, in the guardianship area, there are going to be several different areas that we're going to talk about today where the clerk is actually sitting as a judge, right, Wes?
Yeah, that's correct. That is different than many states. You know, oftentimes when, Cecil, I'm sure when you're speaking with attorneys from other states in the United States regarding maybe estate matters that are happening there that obviously we have some involvement in some way, or they are these attorneys in other states maybe represent someone relative to an estate matter here, those attorneys are oftentimes surprised when we talk about the administration of an estate and the proceedings relative to that don't go before a actual attorney who is a judge of probate. Sure, you've heard that quite often or many times, Cecil.
Correct.
As have I. But in fact, it's the clerk of superior court who has original jurisdiction over all matters over estates. So that's an example of something that's different in North Carolina than many other states, that we don't have a separate judge of probate. And you can imagine, Lockwood, in the probate area, you know, anyone who listens to our radio program knows that there can be plenty of conflict and plenty of litigation and quasi-litigation. And a very large part of that starts originally, meaning that's where you file it, and that's where that this is who has the authority to make at least initial decisions in estate-related matters. Many of them go before the clerk of court,
mm-hmm.
you know, without a jury, and the trial, so to speak, is there before the clerk of court, or as it's done in many jurisdictions in North Carolina, an assistant clerk of court who's designated by the clerk of superior court to handle a particular
wow.
area. And that's kind of the way it's done. Let's just talk about Carteret County. We have a particular assistant clerk of court who is pretty much the head of all estate matters and is going to hear contested issues of original jurisdiction in estate-related matters. That's an assistant. And as far as special proceedings go, these would be things like a petition to partition. This is like, to divide out property that's owned by multiple co-tenant owners, or to force the sale of property. This would be foreclosures. This would be guardianships. There's an assistant clerk who normally hears those, although sometimes the actual clerk of Superior Court, Ken Raper, does sit as the judge hear these matters.
Wow.
So that's something that's different than what many other states have as far as this original jurisdiction. And then what comes with that is the appeal process, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you're dealing with these very important issues, and as Cecil mentioned, you know, the name clerk of court would lead one to believe that the responsibility of this elected person is to basically keep the courthouse organized. And certainly that is a part of what the clerk of court does through his or her designees and employees. Certainly the filing of in the courthouse is incredibly important. Timing, you know, statute of limitations, keeping up with those issues, mm-hmm. payment on judgments, keeping up with money that goes in and out. That organization of the courthouse is incredibly important. And of course, the clerk of court has to answer the administrative office of courts for the state. So there's oversight with regard to that. But a very important additional aspect is the clerk of court in many of these situations in type cases that we've brought up here this morning is the actual judge, is the actual, you know, decision maker with regard to these incredibly important things. You know, for example, I mean, let's say that we tragically have a minor child who loses his parents in an accident,
mm-hmm.
and then there is a dispute as to who is going to serve as the guardian for this minor child, you know, until they turn 18. Well, let's say you have a dispute between the mother's side of the family and the father's side of the family, and that's contested as far as, you know, where the child is going to live. I mean, let's say that the family is spread across the country, and there's just disagreement with regard to, you know, who is going to raise this child, where he's going to live, you know, where he's, you know, his exposure to, you know, religion. I mean, all kind of every decision that a child would have through his parents. Well, the individual who makes the decision as to who that person is going to be, that guardian, is the clerk of court in the appropriate county with jurisdiction where that child, you know, resides. So, I mean, you can imagine. I mean, that could be a very contested and important decision.
Very weighty. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
If someone, for instance, Lockwood does not have a will.
Right.
And has not appointed an executor of their estate, then the clerk of court is then going to be the one to make the decision.
Hmm.
Who is going to be the administrator of the estate? Now, there's some statutory guideline,
right.
But the clerk is the ultimate determiner of who would be the executor of the estate. Let's say for some reason we have an executor of an estate, and then they are acting in a manner whereby the heirs are challenging. Maybe they're acting in a negligent way. Maybe they're acting in an untoward manner. Mm-hmm. The clerk of court is the one who has the authority, who would hear the facts in a hearing,
right.
Very similar to a courtroom. There would be attorneys on each side, okay? Mr. Collins would go in as the attorney representing a particular side, argue the case and the law, just like a courtroom, Lockwood, and the clerk of court would then make the decision whether or not the executor has violated their oath of office and is not acting in the best interest of the estate. So over and over again here, we're kind of this morning talking a lot about estates, but it can be in civil matters as well, such as, again, partitioning, petitions to partition, divide property, appointing commissioners to determine the value of a large tract of land that is then going to be divided. There are just any number of substantive areas of the law where our clerk of court takes off the, if you will, file away the paper hat and puts on the judge hat and sits in a posture as the determining arbiter of the law and the facts and makes a decision. So this is our clerk of court in the state of North Carolina, and it is interesting, as Wes pointed out, in that many jurisdictions do not, the authority, the power of the clerk of court is not as broad and sweeping as it is in Carteret County.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins about the duties and responsibilities of a clerk of court. The clerk's office this week, as a matter of fact, introduced technology to theoretically speed things up, and I hope it does. But back to the issue of the clerk's duties and responsibilities, if there's a dispute with the clerk or a decision, is there an appeal process?
So the North Carolina general statutes are going to indicate what the process is for an appeal. Depending on what kind of case it is, you either have the appeal right, which is basically a review by the superior court, because every appeal from the clerk doesn't go up to immediately the North Carolina Court of Appeals.
Oh.
Okay. The appellate division, just so we're kind of clear about how this works, is the North Carolina Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. And those are the state court of North Carolina appellate divisions, but they fall under the North Carolina Court of Appeals. So basically, when the Court of Appeals receives a case, in most cases, what it's doing is reviewing a record to determine if there was any error. In some types of cases, like estate-related cases, then the appeals from the clerk don't go up to the appellate level. They go to the superior court. So the superior court is the highest trial level court. That's where in the state, that's where the largest, like, jury trials take place with regard to civil matters. And in an estate case, when you have an appeal up from the clerk of court, the review standard is going to be an abuse of discretion type standard. So basically, we're not starting new. We're reviewing what the clerk of court did by looking at the record, the transcript, the evidence that was presented, and the superior court is hands are tied. That in the event that the decision of the clerk is something that the superior court doesn't agree with, it doesn't matter if the superior court doesn't agree with it. If the clerk of court's decision is supported by law, the superior court has to affirm it. Now, they might find that, okay, I'm remanding it back to the clerk for further findings of fact or conclusions of law, because maybe the order that was entered by the clerk was thin and further findings that were supported by the evidence need to be included. But what I'm telling you is that the superior court can't substitute its opinion for that of the clerk. If it's just a matter of an opinion, as far as, let's say, who is the right person to be the guardian, that kind of thing, the Superior Court doesn't have the authority to override, you know, the decision, unless there's a technical problem. Let's say that the clerk of court mistakenly appointed someone who's a convicted felon.
Okay. All right.
And statutorily, you can't do that. Well, that's a mistake of law. That's an error of law.
All right.
So the Superior Court would then be able to remand it back for further proceedings to correct that problem. So in most cases, well, in estate-related cases, you're going to have a review of the record, okay, but an appeal by the Superior Court. But in some cases, you have the right to an appeal to the Superior Court for what's called a de novo hearing. And what that is that when you get to the Superior Court, you start fresh. You're able to put on all new evidence and have the matter basically considered entirely again. So you do have that right, and it's a somewhat of a quicker right than the appeal rights are otherwise, because appeals up to the appellate level, the Court of Appeals, and potentially the Supreme Court, you know, they take at least a year for the Court of Appeals to consider, you know, the matter, you know, for the record to be completed, for the opinion to be provided. But you can normally appeal up to Superior Court and get a hearing before a Superior Court judge who is going to be an attorney. And that's another thing we mentioned, may have not mentioned, is the clerk of court. It does not have to be an attorney in North Carolina, but the Superior Court judge does.
Right.
Has to be a licensed attorney. So you do have that relatively quick, you know, remedy to be able to appeal up to the Superior Court through any matters that are heard before the clerk. But the standard maybe is different depending on what kind of case it is. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So in the case of a de novo case, in that situation, does the evidence get reintroduced, or is there new evidence also that can be introduced in that case?
Yeah, it's totally a fresh start, Lockwood. I mean, you can put on the same witnesses, the same exhibit that you did before. You can add to that if you want to. You're not limited. The rules of evidence would apply, and what would be admissible would be subject to, of course, objections that, you know, an attorney would make, or, you know, it could be a pro se litigant would make as it relates to whether evidence comes in to evidence or not and is considered. But it would be, you know, it's wide open to, you know, to start fresh.
All right,
that
aspect of evidence I find interesting as well. So in the case of the original hearing before the clerk of court, and as you just pointed out, the clerk of court does not have to be an attorney. However, and that individual, of course, has been elected by the public to serve as clerk of court. In that presentation, do you present evidence as well in that initial effort with the clerk of court for an estate matter or a petition of property? Do you present evidence at that point as well?
Yes. You do. You do. And I would say, although it's not written in any book anywhere or any law anywhere, I would say that the rules of evidence when you're dealing with the clerk are somewhat relaxed as compared to, let's say, trying a case before a jury. And the reason why is because, you know, frankly, the clerk of court is not really positioned in the best place to kind of understand all of the rules of evidence.
Right.
You know, what should be admissible, what's not admissible, what's relevant, what's not relevant. So oftentimes the clerk of court will, as long as just is what the person is not, you know, they're not trying to put in evidence that's just totally irrelevant, they'll hear it all. Let everything come in, and then they'll decide what matters and what doesn't matter as far as the evidence that comes in. You can't really do that with a jury. I mean, you really, the rules, with as far as the jury goes, I mean, you don't want to just let them hear everything, because they don't have any legal training at all in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the objections and the rulings as it relates to what comes in and what doesn't come in are much more important when you're, you know, at that level before a jury, and probably before a superior court judge as well. But I would say that most clerks are more lenient with regard to what evidence would come in. But yes, the rules of evidence do apply before a clerk of court.
You know,
and then Lockwood, as we move toward the end of the program this morning, we've made it very clear that our clerk of court many, many times sits in more of a substantive judge-like position. But let's go back a minute and talk about some other things. The clerk of court is responsible for all of our jury summoning, all of our jury organization, all of our impaneling of juries, if you will. The organization of the week in the courthouse, one can only imagine. There's district court, there is domestic court, there is superior court, there are hearings then going on by the clerk, such as the ones we've discussed. It's an extraordinarily busy place.
Yes, it is.
There are lots of people. There has to be extreme security under the day and age that we live, all falling within the auspices of our clerk of court. So it's a position that has enormous responsibility, and it is an administrative position as well, whereby, you know, all of these things that Wes and I are mentioning, you know, one person can't do all of these things. We have to have, it's almost like a small corporation, if you will, with different kinds of people, if you will, vice presidents in charge of different areas. Like, for instance, making sure that Wes has, you know, a pool of 25 jurors or 35 jurors to pull out 12 in a jury trial. So, there's a lot of responsibility with the clerk of court administratively, as well as this substantive area we've talked about. We do want our listeners to know, we've got just a moment or two.
Sure.
We do want our listeners to know, Lockwood, that the court system in North Carolina, at right down to the clerk of court in the Superior Court, is now moving toward an e-filing system. Becoming more and more computerized, as one would expect, and information technology. And our clerks of court are concerned about this. There's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be growing pains with we lawyers and the way in which we get our documents filed, because we're not going to be able anymore to just take a document and take it to the steps of the courthouse and clock it in a traditional manner and received a stamped clocked copy. This is not where we are heading. We are heading now to e-filing, and it is going to be an arduous process for we lawyers and we law firms, as well as, of course, the clerks of court. But we're all going to work together. We're going to make it happen and give us, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year, year and a half,
right.
It will become the new normal. But it's going to take a little while, Lockwood. So the courthouse, our listening public is going to have to be aware of this. It's going to affect the way in which the clerks of court can assist you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to just walk in without an appointment and maybe, you know, get a document such as you used to, receive your divorce decree from many years ago, clock in something with the magistrate court or the small claims court. Everything is going to be a bit different. And so Wes and I are looking forward to this. Ken Raper is looking forward to this, Lockwood. But there are going to be some very dramatic changes. And by the way, those became effective this Monday, this past,
right.
Well, today's Tuesday. So that was yesterday.
Yeah. No, the other aspect of this, and Cecil, Wes, you both, and of course we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. I do want to remind you, the number 252, area code 726-9050. You know, the concept, and you mentioned this a few minutes ago, Wes, about the appeals process and the fact that in some instances, maybe even in a state case, depending on how, if it goes to a superior court judge or if it ends up in a an appeal process that involves the North Carolina Court of Appeals and maybe even going further, is the issue of time. And I say that with this intent. The important aspect of particularly estate matters, and I would say any matter, if you are very diligent in producing your documentation, if you work with an attorney, that can eliminate a lot of the time cost. And time can also equal into money. So it strikes me, Cecil, Wes, that the real story here is be diligent in our paperwork and our estate matters and things of that nature.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, that kind of dovetails into one of the things I mentioned a moment ago about the clerk of court having the authority, you know, with regard to an important decision, such as if you had a minor child who lost their parents, then who would be, you know, who is the decision maker with regard to who the guardian is? Well, in the event that those parents had a proper will in place, then there would be a guardianship provision in that will that would indicate what their intent was with regard to who would serve as guardian for their minor child if something were to happen to them. So in the event that, you know, you have that proper documentation in place, then the clerk of court is required by statute to always in the best interest of the child, but to follow that directive unless there was some very strong and compelling reason otherwise. So that kind of goes to your point, Lockwood, that yes, the clerk of court has authority to deal with these situations here in North Carolina when in many other jurisdictions, other states across the country, they're much more limited in what their responsibilities are and their jurisdiction obligations are. But to eliminate the necessity of a single person, the clerk, having to make decisions for you or your family, or to at least mitigate that, lessen the likelihood your family would ever be in that type situation, have your ducks in a row. Have your documents in place so that if, you know, tragedy hits in your family or a difficult situation hits, and your wishes, we're trying to determine what they are, they're in a proper legal document that really the court then just follows. And then that issue of discretion, that issue of a conflict, that issue of delay because of the conflict, the issue of it becoming adversarial potentially among family members is then neutralized because you took care of business. So there's no doubt that's a huge money and time saver to just have your affairs in order.
And emotional saver as well. So I just will close with that comment. I want to thank Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And again, Harvell and Collins, and the number, 252 area code 726-9050. And as I mentioned earlier, go online to harvellandcollins.com. And based on what Cecil said just a few moments ago, more and more of our activity is moving to online or digital transmission. So again, Harvell, and spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, thanks very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Lockwood. I think this was a great program.
Excellent program here on Let's Talk Legal.